This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 50 of the TriDot Podcast. We did it. We started a podcast and we're still here. Thank you all so much for being a part of the TriDot Podcast family. Thanks for the listens, the comments, the questions, and the support. If you are out there and you've listened to all 50 of our episodes, give yourself a high five or a pat on the back and just pretend like it's directly from me. If you're just now finding us, or if you've listened to an episode here and an episode there, you know, you're pretty okay too. You know, keep up the quality podcast listening, and we're going to keep up the podcast producing, and let's keep the show rolling. So in honor of episode 50, we are taking the entire episode today and asking your questions. I have three TriDot coaches with us, and we are going to go one by one answering actual questions from actual listeners in the actual podcast audience. First up, joining me today is Coach John Mayfield. A successful Ironman athlete himself, John leads TriDot's Athlete Services, Ambassador, and Coaching Programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. John, you ready for episode 50 today?
I am ready for episode 50, much more than I was for episode 1.
Yeah.
So I am looking forward to this. I am calm. This is going to be fun. Episode 1, I was like more nervous than the start of a race. I was, that was quite nerve-wracking, but 50 episodes in, I'm starting to, hopefully, starting to get the hang of it.
By episode 100, John's going to be parlaying this into a successful radio career. So the growth through episode 50, you're on a good track, my friend. Next up is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth came to the sport from a soccer background and quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I get excited for all these episodes, but I'm especially excited for today. We're going to cover a lot of ground and just a variety of topics.
And last but not least is TriDot coach Jeff Rains. Jeff has a Master's of Science in Exercise Physiology and was a successful D1 collegiate runner. He's qualified for the Boston Marathon multiple times and has raced over 120 triathlons from competitive sprints to full distance Ironmans. Jeff has been coaching runners and triathletes since 2009. Jeff, what's up, man?
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Happy 50th episode, everyone. And special thanks to you, Andrew, for all that you've done to create this great resource and this opportunity to nerd out on triathlon each week. And also thanks to all the athletes and all the listeners. I'm excited to kind of give this episode back to the listeners.
Yes, and we do plan on doing more of these in the future. So again, if you guys ever have any questions about any aspect of your triathlon training, shoot them our way at tryout.com/podcast. There's a spot where you can submit feedback, and that sends an email directly to me. A lot of our questions today came from the email inbox. And then there's also a spot where you can leave us a voice message, and you can actually record your voice for the show asking a question to our experts. So take advantage of those resources, because we want to be the podcast of the people, and we want to be the podcast that asks the questions that you guys want to know about. So who am I? I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and the captain of the middle of the pack. We'll roll through today's warm-up question and then get into the good stuff, your multi-sport questions asked to our panel of coaches. Then we'll wrap it up with some reflecting thoughts as we hit episode 50 of the podcast. I'm going to have each one of our coaches share their favorite episode of the TriDot podcast so far.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Part of the experience of doing an Ironman event, or really any just well-organized multi-sport event, is the Race Expo. In the days leading up to the event, vendors and companies will set up shop in the Race Village surrounding Packet Pickup, and athletes and spectators can roam around and see what goods and services they have to offer. It's a great way to check out some name brand products in person and maybe even discover something new. Elizabeth, Jeff, John, I know y'all are no stranger to the pre-race expo experience. So my question today, when you head to the expo, what is the first vendor tent that you typically want to visit? Jeff Raines, I'll start with you.
I go straight to the run shoe section or the run shoe vendors. I like to see if there's any good sales on models that I know and love, and maybe I want to get a good deal. But also, a lot of times they will have demo of new products coming out or just some cool technology. A lot of their reps on site to let you know what's coming out.
So, I mean, it's a great chance to try on a shoe that maybe you've been eyeballing, have heard some good stuff about, and because you got to make sure it fits your foot, right?
Absolutely. And I have to throw this in there. Don't buy a pair of shoe and do the race the next day in a shoe you're not used to, because that has happened before. And then also grab a coffee mug. I like to collect
a coffee mug.
Race weekend, race coffee mugs.
Do races usually have like an official race day coffee mug?
A lot do. Ironmans especially do.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
But kind of a coffee mug nerd as well as a shoe nerd, I guess, maybe.
Got to have things to collect. Elizabeth James, what is your go-to race expo vendor tent?
So when you were saying we're no strangers to these expos, I feel like I kind of have the Debbie Downer answer here. I must admit that I have only fully experienced two race expos as an athlete.
Elizabeth.
Yeah. I really just have done the Boston Marathon Expo and then the expo at Kona. And I loved both of those. And I really enjoyed those. Was able to talk with a bunch of vendors, you know, kind of do some of the things that Raines was talking about. But I could do that 3 to 4 days prior to racing. The ones that are right before the race, I get so nervous before racing, and I do much better off just to be in my hotel room by myself rather than visiting with vendors. I hardly talk to my family, let alone strangers at that point. And also kind of as Raines was mentioning, I don't want to be tempted to try anything new in the days before the race. So I'm usually part of that check-in and leave crowd. I'm also a little superstitious about buying anything with the race name on it before I cross the finish line. So even though I'm not maybe frequenting the expo ahead of time, you will definitely find me in line for some awesome Ironman gear the day after.
Well, and that's when it's always 25 to 50% off anyway, right?
Well, there we go. Get the deals too.
Yeah, whatever's left. So
bargain shopper.
John?
It's not so much going to the tent or seeing the gear. It's seeing people. Over the last several years, I've spent a lot of time on the road. We are at the vast majority of all the U.S. Ironman races. It's oftentimes the same folks out there. And these are some of the folks I end up hanging out with because, like, you're in a city that's not at home. You're on the road, staying in a hotel. And all the athletes, you know, they go to bed at, like, 6 o'clock. So there's all of us that are there in these cool places, not racing. So we kind of have a little group that we get together across the country. And so that's always what I look forward to, is going and seeing those friends out on the road. And each town, we kind of have some spots we tend to hit. And it's always fun to explore new cities, find new places, always indulge in the local fare and see the local sites. So yeah, it's more so about the people that...
What a guy. Not the products, but the people.
Yeah.
John Mayfield, man of the people. I love it. So I always just like, you know, kind of going by Roka and throwing some of their new sunglasses on my face and see what looks good. And John, actually, while I'm talking about this...
They all look good.
You're totally an enabler. Do not go to any tent with John Mayfield, because I kept putting on Roka sunglasses. There's different models. And I would put one on and John would look at me and go, oh, you need those. And I'd take them off. I put a different pair on. Oh, no. You need those. And John was trying to sell me on several different Roka models. And I actually now... race in Roka sunglasses. And as a guy with fairly terrible vision, my eyeglasses are now Roka because I tried a couple of their models on at a race expo and really like the way they fit my face. So I always like the Roka tent.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Our main set today is brought to you by Tritats. Whether you're a seasoned Ironman or gearing up for your first local sprint try, Tritats will help you make your mark. These tough, stylish, and easy-to-use race number tattoos make you look and feel like a pro. I personally have raced countless local sprint and Olympic tries where I showed up thinking I had plenty of time to settle in the transition, only to find a massive line waiting to be body marked. Switching to TriTats has allowed me to show up on race morning with my focus on the finish line, not the body marking line. If you have an Ironman race this year, their Iron Tats are made especially for you. Iron Tats body mark you for that one key race and include the all-famous M-Dot logo. Friends don't let friends race with Sharpie on numbers. So as a friend of the podcast, head to TriTats.com and use promo code TRIDOT for 10% off your order. Again, that's TriTats.com, promo code TRIDOT. When we started the podcast, the mission was never necessarily to use the show to promote the brand. We believe the quality of the training and our encouraging community speaks for itself. The podcast is simply here to educate athletes in all facets of our crazy sport. The athletes in our podcast audience and in the TriDot family frequently ask excellent questions. And so in honor of episode 50, we decided to pull some of the questions we have received from the athletes since we launched and have our coaches talk them through just kind of one by one. So guys, we're just going to kind of round robin this, and I'm going to pull a question up and direct it to one of you. And let's give our athletes, let's give the people what they want. Give them the answers to the questions they have. So number one, this is Matt from Ontario, Canada. I would like to hear your coach's input on double workout days, back-to-back versus morning and afternoon workouts, and then fueling for these longer days. So Elizabeth, let's throw this to you. What do you have to say to Matt?
All right. I often see athletes ask this question when they'll have like bike intervals and an easy run scheduled for a day's training. Unless the run is specified as a transition run, these sessions can be completed separately. If time allows and you're able to complete them as back-to-back sessions, I would just say to be very careful that you aren't compromising the intent of the training session. For example, I almost always do bike intervals followed by an easy run on Tuesday morning, but I have to be very careful that I stick to my zone 2 heart rate for that easy run, even if I'm doing it off the bike and not later in the day as a separate session. I personally like the additional practice of running off the bike and practicing my nutrition for a 2-hour workout session where I'm switching between disciplines. I also love doing my Friday morning swim followed by an easy session on the bike for kind of that same purpose of practicing the swim to bike transition. But for many athletes, the decision to do workouts back to back or as separate sessions really just comes down to scheduling. And, you know, it's not detrimental for these sessions to be split up. If you need to do the sessions as a morning and an evening workout, that's 100% okay. And you'll still have the opportunity to practice those transitions between disciplines on kind of those longer workouts that are on the weekend. And you can practice the race nutrition during those sessions too. I guess just one other thing that I would note for athletes that will see kind of the discipline specific sessions and then a strength workout. I would recommend that they do the discipline specific sessions first and then follow that up later on with the strength training.
Yeah, I think John actually always says it this way, you know, the best practice for you, you know, on getting better as a cyclist is to cycle. And the best practice to get better running is to run. And so the strength sessions are important, but we want to make sure we're nailing our runs and our swims and our bikes first before moving into those strength sessions. So, and to that, actually, that was from episode 19 of the podcast where we talked about how to incorporate strength into your routine. So for anybody kind of wondering how to balance those two, right? How do we balance triathlon training with strength training? I would encourage them to go back and listen to podcast episode 19. But Elizabeth, I do kind of exactly what you said. I mean, I kind of just take it by the day and just kind of look at my schedule and see how it works out best. There's some days where I have that zone 2 run scheduled and then a bike scheduled, and just due to the weather or due to what we're doing, it might be easier for me to do the run in the morning, and keep it in zone 2. And then after work, you know, when the sun is high in the sky and it's hot outside, do that bike session controlled, you know, indoors on Zwift. So I kind of just flex it depending on how it works out. Some days it's doing them back to back. So I think the important takeaway for an athlete here is that if you're doing the session correctly, there's no wrong answer here. It's just kind of thinking through, okay, am I doing, what is the purpose of this session? And if I'm protecting the integrity of the purpose of that session, you can kind of do it whenever or you need to do it. Is that right?
I really like how you said protecting the integrity of the session, because that's really what we want to do.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that you're getting in those quality sessions, and where it does need to be, you know, the aerobic work and the zone two work, that we're still sticking with that as well.
Yeah. If you shouldn't be practicing running off the bike at the expense of staying in the right zone.
Correct.
So. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to our next question. This is from Sarah, a Zimbabwean athlete in the Tridot family who lives and trains in Zambia. She said, "Hello, Tridotters." What a great greeting. "Hello, Tridotters. I've been with Tridot a few months now, and I have managed to bump my dots in each assessment. But since my last assessment, I'm really struggling to hold my zone 4 power on the bike. Has anyone else struggled like this? How long did it take for you to settle into the new zones? RPE for those workouts is a 10 currently." I'll throw this to you, Jeff Rains. This is an athlete that had a great assessment, bumped their dots, they're seeing improvement, but now that their workout zones have adjusted, they're really having a hard time hitting the zones in their training. What would you say to Sarah on this?
First off, I would say congrats on bumping the dots. Multiple months in a row. That's
we need a bump the dots sound effect for the show. Anytime we talk about somebody bumping the dot, that we just hit a little, you know, yeah,
ding ding ding.
Yeah.
And that delta of improvement in gains can get harder to achieve each month as you approach kind of your true peak thresholds. So there's a saying that I'm kind of reminded of. It doesn't get easier, you just get stronger. I think that's Greg LeMond, but
famous 1970s, 1980s cyclist Greg LeMond.
It's a joy, and it's amazing to have a bump the dot, right? You've gotten stronger. You did an assessment. You tested your fitness, and you see, awesome, great. I had some new gains this month, and you celebrate, but you don't always celebrate for very long, because that kind of means, hey, until I test again, now my workouts are gonna get harder. I have earned harder zones, so to speak. But that first week or two into a new mesocycle in Tridot, that month, the first few weeks of the month, the quality zone 4 sets are shorter than weeks 3 and 4. So Sarah, if you go back and kind of look at each month, you might have some 4 minute long zone 4 repeats. You might have 4x4 minutes at zone 4. And then that third, maybe fourth week, you know, you have some 8 minute, 10 minute sets even in zone 4. So, but what you can do is your first week or two in a new mesocycle is start off, if you have a zone 4 range, start off that first set maybe in the lower zone 4, get a feel for it. And then as
your zone 4 is like 160 watts, 180 watts, you know, target the lower range. Target, okay, let me try to hold 160 for a little while before building up a little bit deeper into the range.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So if that zone 4 range is, you know, 30 watts, yeah, start on the lower end of that. And then as you have a fourth and fifth set inside of one workout, maybe the fourth and fifth set, you try to achieve kind of mid to upper zone 4. And then maybe weeks 3 and 4, you kind of go out that first set in the middle of the zone and do all of them in that middle to upper. So there are little tricks you can do to kind of test your fitness, see how you feel that day. Is it necessarily the zones, or are you just feeling unique that particular day? So also know that if you are going to automate and download your Tridot workouts to your smart trainer and have those workouts automated, at any time you can bump up or down those little white arrows in Zwift, up or down up to 10%. And so you can fluctuate even automated erg mode sessions. You can kind of change where you sit inside of those zone 4.
And even for an athlete who doesn't have Zwift or doesn't have the power meter or you know, however you're training, you know, if you're trying to hit zone 4 and you're just not able to hold it for the duration that you're given, you know, do the best you can, right? I mean, try to come as close to the targeted range as you can, and your body will in time get there, shouldn't it?
Absolutely. And lastly, what I would recommend Sarah does is go back and look at her zone 4 sets from previous weeks and see what her kind of heart rate or max heart rate got to inside of that zone 4 set, and compare it week to week, and then what cadence was she holding while she achieved that? Because if her RPE is a 10 out of 10, like she said, and her heart rate was actually 6 beats lower than the week before, then she just felt unique that particular day, and it wasn't a fitness issue or something like that. So it's just a number of different little kind of games you can play to accommodate those on force.
So this really points out the reason and the need for the ongoing testing. So every Trot Out athlete has assessments on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
Kind of as a rule of thumb, it's every 3 to 4 weeks. And what that allows us to do is ensure that the athlete is always training at the proper intensity level. So this is what we want the athletes to experience, is that they somewhat grow into those power zones. And then as soon as they do that, they get new power zones. But we don't want to just automatically across the board have these linear constant increases in power, because it may exceed what that athlete should be training at. So that's why we test regularly to ensure that they're always training at that intensity level that will produce those gains. So what we don't want to do is always train at the same level. So if they those zones that were easy last week, that's a great indicator that you're there and you need to move on, move up to the next level. So that's what we want to do is always test and always ensure the athlete is training at the proper intensity level so they can continue to bump those dots, continue to make those gains.
All right, next question I'm going to throw your way, John. This is another zone 2 run question. And we get from time to time kind of the zone 2 training questions. And the questions we're getting, guys, from athletes on zone 2 workouts are getting a little bit more specific. So you can tell the athletes are learning, you know, they're learning the why. And so now we're just talking through the how a little bit. So this is athlete Terry, has a great question about zone 2 runs. If you can't maintain a zone 2 pace without elevating your heart rate to zone 3, is it better to run at zone 2 pace without walking breaks as needed, to run at a pace that keeps heart rate in zone 2, even if it's zone 1, or does it not really matter just so long as you keep your heart rate in zone 2? So, John, what is the best approach for athletes to take when they're trying to keep that heart rate in zone 2?
So the important thing to do is find the pace that allows them to hold zone 2 for as long as possible.
Okay.
So we have some very specific intent when we hold the zone 2 heart rate. It's developing that aerobic efficiency. It's all those things that we've discussed time and time again, all those advantages of being able to maintain that zone 2 heart rate. And it's important to maintain that zone 2 heart rate in these sessions. So the pace is not particularly relevant. What we want to do is ensure that we're holding that zone 2 heart rate for as long as possible. And until the athlete has a good foundation of that aerobic efficiency, oftentimes it's going to require them to run a little bit slower. If they hold that zone 2 pace, what we're going to see is that heart rate is going to escalate up into zone 3, especially as those environmental conditions change. As elevation increases, as heat index increases, it's that much harder to maintain that zone 2 heart rate for that given pace. So what we need to do here is just not pay attention to the pace. We want to pay attention to that zone 2 heart rate so we get all those benefits of training at the zone 2 heart rate.
Yeah,
so,
I actually created a field on my Garmin watch that all it shows me is heart rate. Because if I toggle between heart rate and pace, like I'm always tempted to overdo the pace on zone 2. And so I make myself, like, if it's a zone 2 run, I don't look at any other data field. I just have time and heart rate, and that's all that matters on that day.
Exactly.
Just making sure the body's not working too hard.
Yeah. So walk or slow down as needed, but you need to stay ahead of that. So kind of if you're waiting until you hit that top of zone 2 to start your walk, then that's going to be too late. It's one of those, heart rate is a delayed response. So it's going to take longer. So stay ahead of it. So know what your max is, know where you need to take those breaks in order to really maintain that zone. Cause, we want to kind of stay in the zone and we don't really want to max it out. So it's oftentimes what we'll do is we'll try to push to that one beat per minute.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of that, but really, what we want to do is really stay kind of in the meat of that zone 2 zone. So, do what you can to manage that. So this is something that, I really started focusing on a couple of years ago, and I did it on the treadmill. I took advantage of some of those sessions there, and because the pace wasn't really accurate anyway, and I was using heart rate as my metric. So I did the same thing that you did, where I just had time and heart rate.
Yep.
And I didn't really pay attention to my speed on the treadmill, and really dedicated to maintaining that zone 2 heart rate. And it's really paid off for me, and I've really been able to see the benefit of it. So not only now am I able to maintain my zone 2 heart rate all day long at a zone 2 run, I can actually push higher, faster paces, and I see lower heart rates at higher intensities. So my threshold pace, I'm now able to maintain my threshold pace at a lower heart rate than I was before. So I kind of have a little game I do now. I continue to do a lot of these sessions on the treadmill, especially in the heat of the summer. And what I do is I still do a 9-to-1 run walk protocol, like my easy hour run, and I push up the pace each segment, and I see how fast I can run while maintaining my zone 2 heart rate. And actually what I'm able to do now is do about half that session actually at my marathon pace, while still maintaining the meat of that zone 2 heart rate range.
And what's fun is you don't even know it because you're not looking at pace until after the workout.
So the great thing is I'm able to increase the output. So I'm running faster with less input. So that heart rate is lower. So my body is not working as hard, but I'm able to increase the output. So running faster with less taxing on the body.
So our next zone 2 question, I'm going to throw this to Elizabeth. This is from Jeff. How does hydration, or more appropriately, dehydration affect heart rate? I've noticed as I go further into a long run, say 35, 40 minutes, I have to walk more frequently. Currently, I'm not taking any hydration with me as these runs are only an hour to an hour and 20. I know some of the increase in walking is due to fatigue, but how much is dehydration? Wondering if I should take hydration with me to increase the amount that I can run.
So if you are dehydrated, even slightly, your heart does have to work harder to pump blood, which can and will increase your heart rate. So dehydration is going to thicken your blood because blood is mostly water. And so as you dehydrate and the water is removed or less, your blood thickens and then makes the blood vessel walls constrict. And that can cause the higher blood pressure, constrain your heart a little bit. So yeah, I mean, the short answer there is yes, dehydration can affect your heart rate. Having to walk near the end of some of those longer sessions could be attributed to fatigue or the lack of hydration. For any session that lasts an hour or more, I always take hydration with me. And I think it would be very worthwhile for Jeff to take some hydration with him on those sessions and just kind of look to see what the impact of that might be. Also, you know, for those looking for more specific hydration strategies, more information about that, Dr. Austin did an excellent job back on episode 30 on the sweat science episode, where she talked much more specifically about hydration strategies. So that would be a good resource to go back and check out as well.
Next question. Let's hear from John on this one. It comes to us through Facebook from William in Charleston, South Carolina. He said, I'm about 3 weeks in with this training program. Welcome, William. Glad you're here. And I am really enjoying it and learning a lot. A question to y'all is, when do you do your intervals? I was on a threshold repeat run, and I got to wondering, how does the rest of the world do this? I do my intervals up front after my warm-up and then run the rest at my 10K or zone 1 or zone 2, depending on what the workout tells me to. I do the same with the bike rides as well. I get the intervals out of the way at the beginning of my ride, and then endurance or easy the rest of the way home. How does everyone else do their intervals? So John, this is an athlete who's talking about, you've got that 1 hour workout and you know you have to hit a certain amount of time with those intervals. Is there a strategy where it's better to do them at the beginning of the workout versus the middle or the end?
So some of the workouts will call for a specific protocol to be done. So it'll be a specific warm-up time, then the intervals, then the cool down. For example, some of the long run sessions will prescribe the higher intensity on the back half of the run. So that's going to help prepare the athlete for that race scenario where on the back half of the run, it gets harder. So it's going to help develop some of that tenacity, that grit factor of going hard when you're tired and when you're fatigued. It's also going to mirror endurance or mirror duration. So you're running faster, running harder on the back end of that. So it's going to create a similar training effect to doing a longer run session. Beyond that, most of the sessions, it's kind of up to the athlete. The only caveat is we always want to make sure we have an adequate warm-up. So we don't want to move into the higher intensity too soon. We want to make sure the body's ready. And you really can't have too much of a warm-up. You can certainly have too little. It's hard to have too much. So I tend to delay mine a little further back. And really the main reason is, for me, the easy stuff is always easier before the intervals than after. If I do my warm up, go straight into my intervals, knock out the intervals, sometimes the back half of that session just feels like an eternity, especially if it's like a 1 hour session on the bike and I've got like 30 minutes of zone two on the end. That 30 minutes just seems forever. So what I like to do is have a longer warm up, get in my intervals, and then just have a couple minutes, on the back half of that session. But it's really up to the athlete as far as that goes, just whatever works. And, obviously the long sessions are a little different than the shorter ones, but, there's certainly flexibility there. Get in a good warm up, do what you need to do to have, a lot of success to be able to nail those higher quality, higher interval, higher intensity sessions.
Yeah, I'm very much like you, John, on the bike. So I'm different for the bike and run. You know, for the bike, I don't want to do the intervals so early that I'm just spinning in zone two for 30 minutes on the back half. So I stage the warm up and I stage, you know, kind of the zone two time to where my main set is like right in the middle of the workout. And so once I'm through the main, all the main intervals, there's only a couple minutes of zone two left before I start cooling down. For the run, I like to hit the quality work as soon as possible. So, you know, getting an adequate warm up. I'm an easily injured athlete, so I make sure I get a good warm up in, you know, running the 5-10 minutes and then doing the warm up drills that are prescribed to me, but before I get to the quality. But then once my body's warmed up, I want to get those quality intervals out as soon as possible and then just almost relax. I find running in zone two quite relaxing. So just kind of relax in the zone two for the rest of the run. So our next question, this comes from Raul De La Rosa. And Raul sent in a voice recording for us. He wanted to ask this question himself. So let's check out what Raul wants to know.
Hi, my name is Raul De La Rosa. I'm here in Southern California. About a year ago, about 9 months ago, I was training using the TriDot program for Ironman Arizona, and then I suffered a heart attack. Long story short, I had a bypass surgery. Now I'm cleared by my cardiologist to start training or even racing. Now, what kind of training do you think has tried that ever trained someone with that kind of surgery that I had? Thank you very much. Bye bye.
All right, great question from Raul, an important question for us to cover as well. So thank you for putting this out there for us, Raul. Jeff Rains, what would you have to say to him?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry about your heart attack. I'm glad you are bouncing back. You're back in the saddle, no pun intended. So kudos there, and Godspeed your recovery. Really, what I would do first and foremost, especially easing back into your training. You know, it should be done in a way that is according to what your doctor recommends first and foremost. And that information and those recommendations should be translated to your coach. If you're not working with a coach, I would recommend, if ever in your life you are going to, this is a situation where that would be crucial. So working with a coach is the best way to tweak the plan, and really, really through good communication, find what's best for you in this scenario. Now, if that just isn't an option for you, then, you know that in your preferences section, you can change your volumes. You can, you know, make your workouts, you know, bike and run only. You can minus the swim. You can take off run, stuff like that. So you can change those preferences and your volumes. Also, what you can do is incorporate cross training. Something with lower impact, things that aren't going to put as much stress on the heart. So working with a coach, changing your preferences, cross training. If you miss a workout, the beauty in what TriDot does is it sees it, it knows it, it flags it, and future sessions can and will be altered. So if you need to modify something in the moment, that is totally fine. So work with your coach also to maybe prescribe less quality as you start coming back. So you know, maybe getting rid of or modifying those zone three, zone four sets, incorporating more zone two, or maybe incorporating longer rest periods in between those intervals. all are things that you can do to safely return into those quality sessions.
Yeah, and the important thing there obviously is whatever you do, you know, make sure it's in alignment with what your medical doctor you know, has recommended you do, because they are the experts there, for sure. So next question, this comes from Shannon.
Hey everybody, this is Shannon from Bel Air, Maryland, and I've got a question for the data geeks. Since I started at TriDot, I'm curious why there are not more high intensity rides. And believe me, I'm trusting the process. I've seen incredible results in my swim and in my run, but previously when I've really focused on cycling specific programs, there's been a lot more VO2 work, a lot more anaerobic work, with the idea of being kind of pulling up your FTP rather than improving your FTP by riding at zone 4, which is what I pretty much do for TriDot. Other than power builders, 30-30s, 30-90s, I really don't see a lot of zone 5 work, the occasional step up ride, but I'm spending probably 90% of my time, at least in intervals, riding at zone 4. Can you explain to me the reasoning behind that? What am I not seeing as a relative noob to triathlon? And am I letting my cycling background color my thoughts here?
Gosh, this is a great question. So I'm really, really glad that Shannon asked this. I guess kind of just going back a little bit, zone 4 is your 60-minute threshold. And athletes can do more of that than they can do of the zone 5 or zone 6. So zone 5 and zone 6, by definition, are the muscular and the neural stress. And those are rather self-limiting. You are getting the zone 5 and zone 6 work that is prudent, because if you spend more than the optimal amount of time in those upper zones, it becomes very counterproductive. And an athlete's training stress profile provides the right amount of training stress for each athlete to maximize their potential without that overtraining, without those counterproductive effects.
And it knows that based on just your age, your biomechanical indicators, your genome files, you know, it knows how much stress your body can handle in zone 5 and 6, correct?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. There are so many factors that are taken into account there, so that it can accurately prescribe how much of each intensity zone would be appropriate to really see the benefits of that. And I guess just kind of as a side note here, this is also why it's so important to follow the environment normalized pace and power, so that you're not pushing the muscular and the neural stress beyond what is productive. I know that Ryan Tibble also did a great job of going into this a little bit further on the podcast episode on respiratory health, where
yes,
he talks about VO2 max and, you know, the benefit of really developing your threshold and how that zone 4 threshold really translates into your best race results, even more so than training that zone 5, zone 6.
Yeah. And just talking specifically about the bike, I mean, there's, you know, road racing, you know, when you're racing with a team, there's crit racing where it's a lot more of sprinting in and out of corners. As triathletes, we're time trialists, right? We get in our position, we have a certain distance we have to cover, and we have to cover that distance just at a steady clip, as fast as possible. And so holding zone 4 for longer periods of time is probably more applicable to how we have to race, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I would even kind of add in that whole, you know, train smarter, not harder. Certain people can only have a certain capacity to handle zone 5 and 6. So certain people can only absorb the benefits of that so much. And so just doing a whole bunch of zone 5 and zone 6 does not necessarily make you faster. And you also got to think that if you're updating your zones and doing your monthly assessments, and you're doing them right, every month you're achieving a new higher, harder zone 4. So every month your zone 4 gets harder. So if you think of it that way, it kind of helps bring home the fact that doing just a bunch of zone 5 and 6 isn't how you improve your zone 4.
Well, and I know TriDot founder Jeff Boer, I've heard him put it this way before, you know, since we're a multi-sport sport, you know, you can only pull on each lever so much. And if you train more in zone 5 and zone 6 on the bike, okay, let's say, you know, from month to month, you know, for a month or two, you might increase the bike FTP more than if you do more of that work in zone 4. But at what cost to your running and swimming? And at what cost to, you know, your bike FTP maybe six months from now.
The second half of your season.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the training is designed to balance it all for you to grow in all three sports, you know, at a proper rate. So anyway, great stuff from both of you guys there. So thanks for that. And great question, Shannon.
The next one comes from Alex from Oceanside, California. And John, let's have you talk to this. Alex says,
I love the data and numbers, but during race day, tech can and sometimes does fail, sensors, etc. So what tips or drills do you have to build self-awareness or perceived exertion knowledge? I know, John, we've talked before, I think on the podcast, about Garmin's failing and things not connecting correctly on race day. It's happened to me. I know it's happened to you. What do you have to say to Alex here?
Yeah, it's not if, it's when. Inevitably, you race enough, there's going to be a day where your device isn't going to work, the battery's going to be dead, it's not going to connect, something's going to happen. So it's not if, it's when. So you need to be prepared for this and be okay with it when it does happen, especially if it's that big A race. Don't let it sabotage your day. Just say, yeah, I knew this was going to come at some point. It sucks, but carry on. Your fitness is still there. Your fitness is not dependent on that device working. You can still execute your race. But every session is an opportunity to dial in that perceived exertion. It's important to pay attention. So this is something that just comes with time. And we really see this on the swim. So oftentimes we get questions of how do I know what pace I'm swimming at, because I don't have those real-time metrics when I'm swimming. Yeah. And it really points out the importance of learning what those paces feel like. So when the athletes are intentional of swimming at a certain pace, they dial that in, they know exactly what that pace is. But that's also true for cycling and running as well. You ride long enough, you run long enough, you get a really good feel for what your power output is, for what your pace is. You know, I've been doing this long enough. I can go to a track and I can run a 7-minute mile within 2 or 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Several times over. It's just something I've done it enough. I know what that feels like. I know what my easy pace feels like. I know what my threshold pace feels like. So come race day, if my device does fail, I still know where I should be and have a good feel for when my heart rate is low, when my heart rate is elevated. Really just use every session to dial that in. And that's true for a lot of things that we want to do. Use those training sessions, especially the long sessions, if you're racing a long course, to dial in those race day skills. So even things like nutrition and pacing and all these things. So every session is an opportunity to learn what those things are. And oftentimes we see that pros sometimes don't wear a watch. There's a lot of reasons for that, but one of the reasons is they don't need it as much. They've been doing this long enough. They know exactly what those intensities feel like. So they're not as dependent on that device for that feedback. They know they have it dialed in, and they know what they need to be doing, and they know what they are doing. So they have a very high perception of that output.
Yeah, I know for me, John, when I came on the TriDot and started training with the training, it was almost like taking mental like inventory as you're going through the training session. You know, of what does zone 4 feel like? What does zone 3 feel like? What does zone 2 feel like? And being just aware of that, and instead of mindlessly running or spinning your legs on the trainer in zone 2, you know, take some time to think, okay, what does this feel like right now? What is my breathing like in this zone? What is the exertion for my legs feel like in this zone? And I learned very quickly on the track running, okay, this is what zone 4 feels like in terms of the cadence my legs have to spin at. And now to your point, I can run pretty well in zone 4 on a track or off the track just from having done that in practice and just kind of being aware of, you know, what it's feeling like and how it's taxing your lungs, how it's taxing your legs. Next up, this is from Vanessa. She says, if you have to take a few weeks off of training because of an injury, how do you get back into it, especially if you have a race coming up? Coach Jeff Rains. What do you think about this, coming back from injury?
You know, we get this sometimes with injury. We get this maybe a little bit more like vacations especially. But, you know, people kind of panic if they have to miss 4 or 5 days, or if they miss that big bike ride, you know, and they're on vacation and they're kind of worrying that, oh, am I losing bike fitness, you know, things like that. You know, it takes roughly 10 to 14 days before you really start to detrain and lose fitness. So I understand kind of being stagnant or static for a number of days or a week or so. You know, c- coming up to a race? You mentioned you have a race coming up. First of all, if you were injured, should you be racing at all? If you got the clear, maybe you will race it at a much easier intensity than you once thought you would. But anyways, don't try to play catch up. Don't squeeze in extra sessions. Don't try to cram fitness in there. It won't work. It'll only hinder you. So just get back on the plan is what I have to say. If you're far enough out from a race, maybe you will update your assessments. So now you will have updated training zones, and maybe you can see if you did indeed lose fitness. But ease back into the lower zone, the lower ranges of your zones, just for that first week or two to get back into the swing of things. And what I like to do is maybe the end of that first week back, or maybe even that second week back, negative split the ranges. So if you got a 10-minute run where you're supposed to stay in zone four for 10 minutes, maybe every second minute inside of that, you increase 10 seconds per mile or something. You can kind of negative split the set and test your fitness a little bit, but that way you are safe that first week or two, so you kept the integrity of the prescribed workout, but also you were patient and smart and didn't just shock the body going right out at that.
I know I am a more easily injured athlete. I thought that about myself already. And then when I did my genomics through ancestry.com, I found out very quickly that was confirmed. I'm an easily injured athlete. And so I know for me, if I feel anything kind of coming on that isn't right, that's more than just kind of day-to-day soreness, I take a second, I take a day or two, you know, just like what you said, pull back on the intensity a little bit, maybe do the duration, but pull back on the intensity, you know, make sure your body feels all right, because it goes a long way preventing injury, and it goes a long way not letting these things develop. So if you're coming back from injury, you know, not rushing it and coming back healthy is more important than rushing to hit certain zones and to hit certain intensities before that race day, right?
Absolutely. And it's listening to your body and knowing when to hone back and maybe even skip a zone four set and just finish the duration at an easier zone two when in doubt.
So we have a really solid list of questions here. And guys, we are going to do these kind of episodes a little bit more often. We're not going to wait 50 more episodes before we do an athlete's questions one, because we do get great questions from you guys. And so I've got some here, guys, that I'm going to skip today, and we'll do another one of these soon. But just for time, there's two more I want to get to. This is from Sarah, who is from Alberta, Canada. She says, transitions. I am useless and just so slow. My hands are usually freezing cold, especially after the swim, but sometimes after the bike as well in cold weather, and I just can't function to do anything. How do I make transitions faster, and how do I learn to use my hands when they are so cold? Are there any tricks to warm hands up so that they are functional? And I will say we got several questions about transitions, so many, in fact, that we put out a whole episode on transitions just a few weeks ago. So go back to episode 44 and hear all of Coach John Mayfield and Coach Elizabeth James' tips and tricks to transitioning faster and more efficiently. But we actually didn't cover cold hands on that episode. So Elizabeth, what do you have to say about kind of the tricks to warm your hands up on those cold weather days?
So I can absolutely relate to this. So I'm kind of glad that you threw this question my way. If you are having trouble in transition, one of the first things that I would say is utilize the volunteers. They are more than willing to help you, you know, snap your helmet, put on your shoes, use their help. If your hands stay cold on the bike out of the water, you even kind of mentioned, Sarah, you know, that your hands are still a little bit cold on the run. I recommend using the little hand warmers, the hot hands. Yes. Yeah. I personally use those. I open up a packet of them as I'm setting up my transition area. If I know the weather's a little cooler that day, I put a pair of them in the gloves that I'm going to have on the bike. And this has been a lifesaver for me. My hands are often so cold coming out of the swim that it's been difficult for me to change gears or use the brakes. So I have found that to be a very, very helpful thing for me, and hopefully helpful for her as well.
This final question comes from one of our Tryout athletes, Arthas, and he recorded this for us. He tells us a little bit, guys, about his tri club that he races for. So we're going to hear about that. And then he's going to close with what I think is a really fun question to close with today. So take it away, Arthas.
Hello, coaches. My name is Arthas Del Rio, 2020 Tryout ambassador and a retired military. My tri club name is Team Red 4, Racing for Everyone Deployed, established back in 2018. You can check us out at teamred4.org. I enjoyed the sport of triathlon after quitting smoking 3 decades ago. Kudos to that. A question to the coaches. Just wondering if there are any organized schedule in place already or plans in the near future to have an organized meet the coach in their respective home base, a scheduled training on weekend, once a month, swim, bike, run, or a brick workout. Example, Coach Jeff in the Austin area. Just wondering, Tridot coaches, thank you for your time. Artis Del Rio, 2020 Ambassador, Austin, Texas.
All right, so John, is there are there any plans in the works for us to get some events going in Texas or abroad?
Yeah, so there's actually lots of opportunities. I would say the best is our At the Races events. So we are on site at all of the U.S. Ironman races and several of the 70.3s. We typically have coaches and staff at those events. Some of those are led by ambassadors, but these are great opportunities to come together, whether you're racing in the race or not, and meet some fellow Tridot athletes, get in some fun training sessions. Oftentimes we do dinner, happy hour, coffee, just different fun stuff to hang out and get to know people, as well as network with some athletes that have done the race. So just a good opportunity.
Try to make everybody's race day weekend as smooth and eventful as possible.
Yeah. So I would say keep an eye out for the At the Races schedule. And then also we have different training camps that we offer throughout the year. We do ambassador camp. So lots of great opportunities to come together with coaches, with staff, with fellow Tridot athletes.
Yeah, and nothing we can nothing concrete we can tease yet, but we've been throwing around some different potential locations for future ambassador camps, and we're trying to get around you guys. We're trying to work it around to meet you guys and provide opportunities for all of our wonderful Tridot community to come together. So great question, Arthas, and guys, be on the lookout for future Tridot events.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Our 50th episode slides into its cool down with a fun look back over the 49 episodes that preceded it. A lot of fun has been had and Tri Wisdom shared, and each of you guys have been an integral part of the show from the beginning. So as we look back, let's kind of go around and have each of you share two of your favorite episodes so far. And let's say your first pick has to be an episode you were on, and your second pick has to be an episode you were not on. And John, let's start with you. You were there from the beginning, episode one.
Yeah, kicking it off. As thinking back, and even as we've gone over these questions today, I've thought several times how cool it is that kind of a phrase that has come out of this is we have a podcast for that.
Yeah,
and that's been so great to be able to use that resource, because again, some of these questions come up and we have such good answers. We've got great experts, great coaches, a lot of knowledge. So it's just been a great way to share our collective experience and education and all that. So I'll say probably my favorite episode that I've been on was the one we did not that long ago. Episode 41 is Arrow Everything with Jesse Frank, the specialized wind tunnel engineer.
He was a fun guy. Yeah. He was really fun.
Super cool guy. Lots of great information.
Loves his Taylor Swift music.
Yeah, that was interesting. But just a unique perspective that, you know, we don't always have that information. So it was great to have him. And then I would say probably the one that I was not on, episode number 10, Escaping the Power Stamina Paradox. That's probably the one I've used the most. And to answer that, we have a podcast for that. It's just that's one of those things that's there's so many misconceptions, so many outdated myths that triathletes will follow. And that one really cuts through with some great information for the athletes.
Yeah, that one, if you guys haven't listened to episode 10, Escaping the Power Stamina Paradox, it's one of the handful that are very, very foundational to what we believe at Tridot, to what Tridot training is and how it works and why it works so well for athletes. So go back and listen to number 10 just for some perspective on why your training is laid out the way that it is. Let's go to Jeff Raines. What are your two?
My favorite episodes are the Brendan Hansen kind of weak episodes where three-time Olympian, former world record holder, swam on the relay with Phelps, you know, that we got to interview him and got to get a lot of his advice there. So those were probably my favorite. One that I was not on, that is my favorite, I would say, is episode 31. And I think 21 and 22 were the Brendan Hansen episodes. So 31, the Luca Parmitano.
The Luca Parmitano episode.
Man, yeah. He has an amazing, amazing story to tell. And that is his story from spaceman to Iron Man and just the things that he encountered on his spacewalk. And just how he tied it all into his training in Iron Man and just everything really hit home with me.
What was so fun about talking with Luca is how when you're talking to him about outer space and living on the International Space Station and being commander of the International Space Station, it's just so unrelatable. He's almost like this superhuman, right? Just super smart guy, super cool experiences he's had. But then you get him talking about triathlon. And it's like your peers, right? You're just buddies sitting there shooting the breeze, talking about racing, and he lights up when he talks about triathlon. So I really enjoyed getting to know Luca on that episode. Elizabeth James, what are two episodes you want to give a little shout out to?
So I think one of the favorites that I was on was episode 23 with Reigns, and that was the improving your run efficiency with better biomechanics. And yep. Gosh, I mean, just for us to sit down and gush over all of the great biomechanics of running, and then to really dig into all the numbers and the angles and gosh, body lean, just everything there was super fun. And I feel like that had just, you know, it was jam-packed with information all about
it
the
sure
run.
It sure was, yeah.
So that would definitely be one of the favorites that I've been on. One that I was not on, that is still my favorite, is number one. I just love the history of TriDot and just kind of how the episode talks about how I Am TriDot came to be. And that's one that I've honestly listened to multiple times. It's one of my favorites. So episode one, going back to the beginning.
The OG episode. Mm-hmm. I do think my absolute favorite, Reigns, is one that you mentioned. I've been on all 50 episodes, so I can't say
you
one.
You can't really say one that you weren't. Yeah.
Yeah. So just to kind of add a new one, because the one with Brendan, episode 21 specifically, where he just shared his Olympic story and kind of shared his approach to coaching and how he felt called to coaching after his Olympic career. He was just such an engaging guest. So that's probably my all time favorite episode from the 50. One that you guys haven't mentioned that I'll give a shout out to is episode 27. It was called Don't Miss the Most Valuable Training Block of the Season. And John, this kind of goes back to when you talk about episode 10, the Power Stamina Paradox. Episode 27 was, it's just kind of foundational to what TriDot is and why we believe in it, right? Because so much of the triathlon market believes in just long, endless base miles, long, slow development base miles. And then the closer you get to race day, that's when you start doing your fast work and trying to get faster. And TriDot really preaches the opposite. It really preaches, hey, when you're not preparing for a race, try getting faster now. And then once you get closer to race day, that's when you start building up the stamina and the endurance and just a foundational episode to what TriDot is. So go check that out. But guys, there's 50 of these things. I hope you've been with us for part or most of the ride. We're going to keep the show going and keep the triathlon talk going and hope that you, our athletes, benefit. So keep the questions coming. Keep the podcast listening going, and
great set, everybody.
Well, that is it for episode 50 of the TriDot podcast. A big thanks to coaches John Mayfield, Elizabeth James, and Jeff Rains for answering all of our triathlon questions. Thanks to all the athletes that sent questions my way. If you have anything at all that you've been wondering about being a triathlete, head to tridot.com/podcast and send me your questions. We want to do more episodes like this where we get directly to the things that our athletes want to know. And bonus points if you click on send us a voicemail to record your own voice asking your own question. If you're enjoying the podcast, do us a solid and hit the subscribe button on whichever platform you use to stream our show. We'll have a new one coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.